This is Fresh Air Weekend. I'm David Bianculli of the website TV Worth Watching, in for Terry Gross. In just a bit, we'll listen to Terry's recent interview with Brett McKenzie. You may know him as half of the Grammy-winning comedy duo Flight of the Conchords. Now, McKenzie is up for an Oscar for the song Man or Muppet, which he wrote for last year's movie, The Muppets. But first, we're going to listen to an interview and performance with singer Catherine Russell. For many years, she worked as a backup singer for such artists as Paul Simon, Steely Dan, David Bowie, and Jackson Browne. But more recently, she's been performing and recording under her own name. Russell's new album is called Strictly Romancin'. Her father, Louis Russell, was a pianist, composer, and arranger who worked as Louis Armstrong's music director in the mid-40s. Her mother, Carlene Ray, performed with the all-women's band, the International Sweethearts of Rhythm. Accompanying Catherine Russell in the Fresh Air studio is Matt Munisteri, who plays guitar on the album, served as the music director, and wrote many of the arrangements.
Catherine Russell, Matt Munisteri, welcome to Fresh Air. We've been so looking forward to this. It's really great to have you. So, Catherine, I'm going to start by asking you both to do a song that's featured on the new album. And this one is called Romance in the Dark. And I have to say, it's a very sexy song, especially the way you sing it.
Thank
you.
So
tell us why you chose the song.
It's just such a... I love the blues. And I just love the pictures that the song creates with the lyric.
Dark, it's just you and I, not a sound, baby, not one sigh, just the beat of my poor heart in the dark. Such a thrill when he places his fingertips upon my lips and he begs me, please be still in the dark. Oh, soon. This dance will be ending, and I know, baby, you are gonna be missed. Gee, you know I'm not pretending, 'cause you know it's fun to What the rest have left behind. So just let them dance while we find romance in the dark. Be kissed in the dark.
well. That was fantastic.
Thank you.
Performing for us in our studio, Catherine Russell singing with Matt Munisteri accompanying her on guitar, and that is one of the songs that's also featured on her new album, which is called Strictly Romancin'. Whoa. I love a lot of early jazz and pop, and one of the things I love about your work is that you love that music and you bring it to life in such a beautiful and committed way.
Thank you very much.
And you know the language of it. I mean, I think a lot of singers don't have the right rhythm when they sing old songs because they grew up with rock and they just don't feel a jazz rhythm. But you grew up with jazz.
I grew up with jazz, but I grew up with rock, too. I grew up with blues. I grew up with classical. My mother had an old radio in the kitchen when I was growing up, and we used to listen to William B. Williams' Make-Believe Ballroom.
On WNEW.
On WNEW, yeah, AM. Every morning I was listening to Ella, the Mills Brothers, Steve Lawrence, Anita Gourmet, Judy Garland, whatever, Peggy Lee. So that really kind of formed my appreciation of phrasing of how the people sang these tunes in those days. So I always, you know, was in the mirror with a toothbrush when I was a little girl trying to sing these songs and everything.
Now, I grew up with that radio station too because my parents listened to it, and I hated it then. I hated it because I wanted to hear rock and roll.
Yeah.
But you grew up with parents who were jazz performers.
Yeah.
You know, your father, the late Louis Russell, was Louis Armstrong's music director for a while. Your mother sang with the International Sweethearts of Rhythm during World War II, which is an all-women jazz band. And so did the fact that they loved the music bring the music alive for you?
Yes. My dad's music was some of the first music I ever heard in the house growing up. And my mother was so happy that I kind of took to it, you know, when I was very little, because I like to dance and I love swing. And so, yes, I would say that their appreciation of traditional and different types of jazz kind of formed my young ears.
So let's talk about your first regular gig in New York. I should mention you were a backup singer before you became a soloist.
For many years,
But one of your first regular jobs, maybe your first regular job, was at Catch a Rising Star, a comedy club in New York, where you sang when the checks were being given out, when it was really noisy, and when there was like a famous comedian testing out a new routine. None of the other comics would want to follow
them. Wanted to follow him,
yes. So you would kind of sing right in between to break it up a bit.
Yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily going to be your crowd because they're a crowd who came to see comedy, not music. What songs went over for that crowd?
It was a 15-minute slot for everybody. So comedians, singers, there are a few of us that sang. And so I chose soul and blues. So I would sing three songs. And the first song would be a kind of an up-tempo soul tune. The second one would be blues or some kind of a ballad like, you know, Aretha Franklin. And then the third one would be an up-tempo tune, and they would, so I wouldn't finish the tune. So the band would kind of keep playing, and I'd say, goodnight, everybody, you know, and leave the stage. And so really, after whatever comedian was on, the singer, they'd announce the singer, and the people would go, you could hear it. You could hear it in the crowd. So not only weren't they my audience, but, you know, it would take a tune or two to kind of have them say, oh, all right, she can sing, you know, it's okay. And then they would go back to tallying up their checks.
And you also did backup for a long time, and you sang with Steely Dan and with David Bowie, with Paul Simon.
Jackson Brown. Roseanne Cash. I did a Jay Giles band. I sang with Bernie Worrell of P-Funk fame, you know, a whole bunch of people, and then also backed a lot of people up on television shows, on, you know, David Letterman on the late night shows. Usain Dur, Bette Midler, Beth Orton, Al Green, Ray LaMontagne.
What was it like for you when you started singing solo to be the front person? Because when you're the backup singer, you're not supposed to be upstaging the actual performer.
Right.
But when you're the soloist, you have to have a persona on stage.
It's different. You know, I've sung lead in different bands for a long time, so they were bands that weren't under my name. which was still fine because it wasn't under my name. My name wasn't on the ticket. But as soon as my name was on the ticket, I thought, wow, okay, now, you know, I'm getting to the venue and I'm looking around for the star and it's me. I'm looking around for the other person. They're like, hi, Catherine. You know, I was like, oh my goodness. That was terrifying at first, really. Then the more I did it, you know, then the more comfortable I got. And then I realized, wait a minute, I need to start enjoying my life. So at some point there was I did Rochester Jazz Festival a few years back and we sold out. And I realized, oh my goodness, all these people came to see me. Then I realized, wow, you need to just start to own this, because if people come to see you, you can't be cowering and looking nervous and being, you know, unsure of yourself. So I did a lot of talking to myself about that.
What did you say to yourself?
I said, God meant for me to do this. I mean, this may sound corny, but, you know, God meant for me to do this. My mother wants to be proud of me. I'm representing a lot of people here. And I'm also too old to be standing up being nervous in front of an audience. So there's a reason why I have this opportunity, and I need to take it and own it.
So both your parents were jazz musicians.
Yes.
But you grew up hearing all kinds of things growing up in the 50s and 60s. I'm going to ask you to sing a song that meant a lot to you when you were coming of age musically and when you were really impressionable and learning new things.
All right. Well, my first 45 that I bought was a Supremes 45. I think it cost me about 40 cents back in 1964, 5, something like that. And then with all the girl groups, I loved a song called Nowhere to Run by Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. Then later on, I realized that the Isley Brothers also recorded it, and I loved their version of it. So that's where I take this version from.
Fantastic. And this is my guest, Catherine Russell, singing with guitarist Matt Munisteri.
Nowhere to run to, baby. Nowhere to hide. To baby, nowhere to hide. It's not love I'm running from, it's just the heartache I know will come. 'Cause I know you're no good for me, but you become a part of me. Everywhere I go, every face I see, every step I take, you take with me, baby. Nowhere to run to, baby. Nowhere to hide. Oh, got nowhere to run to, baby. Nowhere to hide. I know you're no good for me now, but free of you, I'll never be. Yeah. Nowhere to run to, baby. Nowhere to hide.
That was great, and what an achievement to sing that solo without a backup group. You know, it's fun. It's funny because that's a song that's usually so dependent on like the backup singers. You used to be a backup singer, and here you are doing it solo.
I don't know. I just love that song. I love the fact that it's actually blues. You know, it's a sad song, but it's you know, we used to dance to that song when I was a kid. So.
Well, thank you so much for performing that. And I should mention, Catherine Russell has a new album, which is called Strictly Romancin'. And now, Catherine, you're here today with guitarist Matt Munisteri. And Matt, you're the music director of the new album, the primary arranger, and the guitarist. You've been working together. How did you first meet?
Catherine called me maybe 4 years ago to start doing some stuff with her. And I'd heard about her maybe a year before that, because our mutual friend Rochelle Garnier mentioned her, and I realized when Rochelle was telling me about her that I played with her and heard her a very long time ago at the Berkshire Mountain Bluegrass Festival. We were in a parking lot picking session when I was like 16 playing banjo, And she was playing the mandolin and singing Bill Monroe tunes. And for years, I thought about this woman. I'm not joking. And the incredible focus and pain and living inside the song that she brought to this, you know, performance of, I think it was In the Pines.
I mean, I grew up on Hee Haw and everything else, so I was listening, you know, Buck Owens and for early on, and loved acoustic instruments, you know, loved the sound of acoustic instruments. And maybe one of the turning points in my life is hearing a traditional Irish string band when I was about 15 years old. And my grandfather had a mandolin in the house because he played the mandolin, so I grew up kind of fooling around on it. But then, you know, and I used to sing, "Hello, my baby, hello, my honey, hello, my ragtime gal," because it's three chords and it was easy to play. So, you know, when I was like 10 years old, I would fool around on that. But then when I heard this traditional Irish band out in California when I was 15, I thought, I've really got to study the mandolin and learn how to play fiddle tunes. So that's really what sparked me to start learning that music.
I'd love for you to do another song, and this is a song by Fats Waller that's the title track of one of your earlier albums called Inside This Heart of Mine.
Yes,
and
yes.
One of the things I love about this, and it's a beautiful song, but you know, you always associate Fats Waller with these like up-tempo kind of jokey songs, and this is a really like heartbreaking song. And it's just not what you'd expect. And it's a beautiful song. Tell us why you chose it.
That's why I chose it, because another instance of me, you know, cleaning up the kitchen after a great meal. And I said, let me put Fats Waller on, you know. And I was kind of, you know, dancing around the kitchen. And then I heard this song and I thought, he's kind of jokingly singing it, but it's just it just struck me. It's such a beautiful song. And the lyric just kind of caught me. And I thought, wow, and I just listened to it about 10 times after that, and I said, okay, I have to learn this. I have to sing it.
Well, you're not kidding around when you sing it.
Thank you.
So this is my guest, Catherine Russell, with Matt Munisteri on guitar, and they're performing in our studio, and she has a new album, which is called Strictly Romancin'.
Outside it's sunny, but in this heart of mine, the world is gloomy, the sun refused to shine. I've done the best that I could do, all for you, now we're through. Sunshine brings danger inside this heart of mine. Blue skies taunt me, memories haunt me. You don't want me. Let me be alone and have my cry. Outside it's sunny, but that's a real bad sign. Love is a stranger inside this heart of mine. Blue skies taunt me, memories haunt me. Want me? Let me be alone and have my cry. Outside it's sunny, but that's a real bad sign. Love is a stranger inside this heart of mine. Inside this heart.
Fa fabulous. Thank you so much. I love the way you do that song. That's Catherine Russell singing the Fats Waller song Inside This Heart of Mine, which was on one of her previous albums. Her new album is called Strictly Romancin', and Matt Munisteri, who's accompanying her on guitar today, is the guitarist and music director on that new album. You didn't have your first solo album until you were 50. Which is,
yeah.
that's pretty old for the first solo album, considering you've been performing for decades.
Yeah.
So before that, did you think, it's never going to happen for me, I'm never going to be like the real soloist, and did that bother you?
I knew that there was a piece missing from my life, and but I didn't know how to do it. You know, I didn't know how to make it happen. I had co-written a bunch of songs with a friend of mine years and years ago, 20 years ago now, and I never finished them, and I thought, gee, do I want to be singing like this when I'm 70? I don't know. And then I had gone to see Alberta Hunter when I was a kid, too, at the Cookery in New York City. She was very inspiring. I had seen Ruth Brown, and because my mother was in her band for maybe 5 or 6 years, and so I really had to evaluate kind of, what am I going to do, and how do I do this? And it, you know, I just didn't think I'd ever have any assistance doing it.
So how did it happen?
Well, I came home from a David Bowie tour in 2004, and I was kind of, you know, we got home from tour, and I thought, gee, okay, now what? Now what am I going to do, you know? And so then my friend Paul Kahn said, you know, you should really people had asked me, why hadn't I recorded my own stuff before? And I thought, well, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to promote it. And he said, well, I want you to do it. You know, I think it's time for you to do this, you know. I said, yeah, okay. So I just put together 14 songs that I knew. He said, I have a friend in the Chicago area with a studio. So send him, you know, the music ahead of time, the source material, and he'll gather up the musicians, and we're just going to go out there and make a record. So that's what we did. And that turned into Cat. That turned into the debut album. So then I was performing at the St. Peter's Church weekday jazz series. So Paul invited two record company people down there to hear me. So it was myself and a piano player. I was doing a duo. And so then the next day, we were sitting down having a meeting about giving me a record contract.
Well, Paul Kahn, who you mentioned, and
yes,
who helped you become a soloist and get your first record,
yes,
is with you today and is in our studio. So I just want to say thank you, Paul. Much appreciated. So I hate to say it, but our I think our time is up. And before you leave, I'd love for you to sing another song for us.
Okay.
And I have one to recommend. It's called Everything's Been Done Before. It's one of the songs on the new album, which is called Strictly Romancin'. And again, tell us why you chose this one.
I was once again listening to a compilation, and this time it was a Louis Armstrong compilation, and Decca had just put this compilation out.
Was your father on these records?
Yes, and this is during the period when my dad was musical director and one of the arrangers for Louis Armstrong's orchestra. Was actually my dad's orchestra during the years of 1935 to 1943. This collection goes up to 1946, but many of the tunes are, you know, my dad's arrangements. And so when I listen to this music, it's like I'm just home, you know. So when I hear Louis Armstrong sing, everything he sings, he's so inspiring to me because he had a hard life, and everything he sings, his life is in every lyric. You believe everything he sings, you know. And so when I heard this song, Everything's Been Done Before, I thought, anyone else singing that, you know, I never heard it before. Anyone else, it would kind of be corny sounding to people, maybe. I don't know. But when he sings it, it's so real that it just drew me in, and I thought, what a simple idea. What an old-fashioned romantic idea.
So was your father music director when Armstrong sang things like Got a Brand New Suit? Or
yeah.
No,
yes,
really?
Yes,
or
yes,
on
yes.
A Coconut Island?
Yep, that's on
no,
those.
Oh, I love that
All
stuff.
Of those things are on that yeah, during those years. Yeah,
in the 30s. So that was actually your father's band?
Yeah, that was his orchestra. That was his
wow.
orchestra. So it was a lot of the guys that he came up from New Orleans with. You know, the orchestra changed personnel starting maybe in 1940. But from 1935 to 1940, it was a lot of guys that were, you know, my dad made records on his own as well. So it was a lot of those same people. So it was, you know, it was like the New Orleans Brotherhood, really, you know. And my dad, of course, was from Panama, but first place he went was New Orleans, you know. So it's got the whole spirit of New Orleans in it for me.
Wow. Catherine Russell, it has been really very special to have you here performing today. Thank you so very much.
Well, thank you. You have no idea. It's been so special for me, and I just want to say dreams can come true. So.
And Matt Munisteri, thank you so much for being here today. So we're going to hear one more song, and this is, again, a song from Catherine Russell's new album, Strictly Romancin', but she's performing in our studio with Matt Munisteri on guitar. And thank you both again.
Everything's been done before, to share a kiss, a moment's bliss, and hear you whisper you love me. Sweetheart, it thrills as old as the hills, but it's new to me. Oh, everything's been done before. The birds that sing the song of spring, always singing above me. Yet with you, they're singing something that's new to me. Life is strange, we hate to change from what is tried and true. Although I know I'm only doing what the others do, yet it all seems new. Oh, everything's been done before. To fall in love with stars above began with Adam and Eve. But when I'm with you, I just want to do what's been done before. Is tried and true. Although I know I'm only doing what the others do, yet it all seems new. Everything's been done before. To fall in love with stars above began with Adam and Eve. But when I'm with you, I just wanna do what's been done before.
That's Catherine Russell performing in the Fresh Air studio with guitarist Matt Munisteri. Russell's new album is called Strictly Romancin'. We're going to listen back to Terry's recent interview with Brett McKenzie. You might know him as half of the musical comedy duo Flight of the Conchords. McKenzie won a Grammy for that project. Now he's up for an Oscar. McKenzie wrote songs for last year's movie The Muppets. One of those songs, Man or Muppet, is nominated for an Oscar in the category Best Original Song. The movie The Muppets stars Jason Segel as a guy named Gary, whose half-brother is a Muppet named Walter. Walter has always lived in the human world, but he's going on a pilgrimage to the old Muppet studio in L.A. with Gary and Gary's girlfriend, Mary, who is played by Amy Adams. Along the way, Mary accuses Gary of caring more about the Muppets than about her and leaves him to sing about his identity crisis.
I reflect on my reflection and I ask myself the question, what's the right direction? go. I don't know. Am I a man or am I a Muppet?
Am I a Muppet?
If I'm a Muppet, then I'm a very manly Muppet.
Very manly Muppet.
Am I a Muppet? A Muppet of a man.
A Muppet of a man.
Britt McKenzie, welcome to Fresh Air, and congratulations on the nomination. Such a great choice for them, for them to have made. I love that song.
Thanks very much.
You are welcome. So when the screenwriters told you that they needed this song, what did they tell you about what they needed?
The script was already written, and Jason Segel and Nick Stoller, who wrote the script, and James Bobin had sort of...
He was the director, yeah.
James Bobin, the director. They had song briefs, and Man or Muppet, it was just it said Man or Muppet, and they wanted a song about being a man or a Muppet. And James had this visual idea that the man would see a reflection of himself as a Muppet, and the Muppet, Walter, would see a reflection of himself as a man. So within the song, it needed to incorporate some sort of echoey sort of idea so that you could go between the two characters within the melody.
Do you see this song as a Muppet power ballad?
Absolutely. Yeah, I really wanted to do a power ballad tune and just wanted it to be as dramatic as I possibly could get it to be.
So is there certain songs or certain performers you were thinking of when you wrote this? You know, like power ballad performers.
Yeah, I was really influenced by Harry Nilsson's Without You. And
sing a few lines so people know
all
the song
by myself.
You're talking about.
You know the one, I can't live if living is without you. I can't give, I can't take anymore. And it just so epic, man. I mean, Harry Nilsson's got the best voice ever. And he sang that, you know, at the height of his career, just when his voice was still there, before he started partying like a maniac with John Lennon. And then Eric Carmen's song, All By Myself. I love that song. A friend of mine used to sing it when she was single, and you know, with a group of couples going, all by myself, don't want to be all by myself anymore. Both those songs have a very similar feel, I think. And so what I wanted to do was get this Man or Muppet song to be like one of those, like a really heart-wrenching, genuinely sincere, you know, power ballad about being a man or a Muppet. And that was what I found really funny, yeah.
And then there's a part where Jason Segel's like bending over in agony and shaking his fists.
It's a great visual. He's on the street, like a downtown Los Angeles street, and the rain's flooding down him. He's buckled over just in the agony of the melody.
Let's hear another song that you wrote, words and music. And this is Life's a Happy Song. And this is like the opening production number. It starts with Jason Segel and his Muppet half-brother brushing their teeth, looking forward to their trip to L.A. where they're going to visit the old Muppet studio. So the song begins there, but it ends on Main Street of small town, where the whole town is parading down the street singing Life's a Happy Song. And you've somehow managed to make this a delightful, happy song, with it also being really funny, like winking, but still being infectious and making me smile throughout the whole thing. Is it difficult to write a song where you almost have it both ways? Like, it's kind of humorous, but it really is such a happy song.
Yeah, the song is definitely very happy. It was one of those songs where the visual kind of dictated what was going to happen to it. So I wrote the initial sort of melody and bridge, and then James wanted it to visually go on the street and these characters be accompanied by all the people in the town until there are 100 people singing along. So it gradually needed to pick up people, a little bit like a song in Oliver Twist, that old musical Consider Yourself in London, where these two street urchins, Oliver and the Artful Dodger, are walking through London and all the people in town start singing along, the butcher and the florist. So we took that sort of idea and then made it more American, yeah.
Great. Okay, so this is Life's a Happy Song, which is from the Muppet Movie soundtrack, and my guest is Britt McKenzie, who wrote the song.
Everything is great. everything is grand. I got the whole wide world in the palm of my hand. Everything is perfect, it's falling into place. I can't seem to wipe this smile off my face. Life smells like a rose,
with someone to paint,
and someone to pose. Life's a piece of cake, with someone to pedal,
someone to break.
Life is full of glee,
with someone to saw,
someone to see. Life's a happy song, when there's someone by my side to sing along. I've got everything that I need right in front of me. Nothing's stopping me, nothing that I can't be with you right here next to me.
Life's a piece of cake, with someone to give
and someone to take.
Life's a piece of fire,
with someone to wash,
someone to drive.
Life's an easy road,
with someone beside you to share the load.
Life is full of highs,
with someone to stir
and someone to fry.
Life's like a lamb,
with someone there to lend a hand.
Life's a bunch of flowers,
with someone to while away the hours.
Life's a fillet of fish.
Hey! Yes, it is.
Life's a happy song, with your someone by your side to sing along.
That's Life's a Happy Song from the soundtrack of the Muppet movie. My guest, Brett McKenzie, wrote the song. He wrote several of the songs for the movie, and one of them, Man or Muppet, is nominated for an Oscar. And you also probably know him as half of Flight of the Conchords. So when the Muppet movie was first released, I spoke with Jason Segel and Nick Stoller, who co-wrote the movie, and of course Jason Segel stars in the movie. And one of the things Jason Segel said about working with you, having you write the songs, he said, we didn't have to tell Brett much in terms of tone because he's by nature very Muppety. Flight of the Conchords is a very, he said, Flight of the Conchords is a very Muppety vibe. It's two wide-eyed innocents making their way through a tough New York. So he knew what to do right from the start. So he's saying that you are by nature very Muppety.
It's very kind of him. It's very
what
kind.
What does Muppety kind, mean to you?
I think Muppety is sort of loose and slightly shambolic and with a lot of imperfections. So I'm not sure that I'm that Muppety, but I guess I am a little bit that, like that.
And what does Muppety music mean? What makes music
well,
Muppety?
Well, Muppety music for me is the sound that Paul Williams and Kenny Asher created when they did the first film, and which had, you know, the classic like Rainbow Connection, Moving Right Along, and it had the Electric Mayhem, which is that band with Dr. Teeth and Animal, the drummer, and they had that sort of, you know, almost Dr. John, sort of a New Orleansy sound, but more chaotic. And so, working on the film, we tried to make these songs capture a little bit of that sound. And one of the guys, one of the arrangers, Chris Caswell, who worked on some of the original Muppet stuff, he told me that Jim Henson used to say, if the music sounds too good, it's not right. So I took that to heart. And it's that thing of, if it sounds too perfect or too produced, it definitely doesn't sound Muppety.
So how do you make it be a great take yet imperfect?
Luckily, most of the Muppets can't sing. So so it means that they always sound a little bit off. And that makes it so much more charming and relatable and sort of Muppetly human.
And what about the musicians?
The musicians, I just told them to keep it simple, not to get too fancy on it. There were a lot of LA session players. And, you know, there's that sound. There's a few instruments that are crucial. There's that tack piano where you get a normal piano and you put thumbtacks along all the hammerheads. So when they hit the string, it gets that saloon bar ting. And then also the banjo and a kind of loose, sloppy bass track.
I know that there's a Muppet code, like you can't call the Muppets puppets because people are supposed to believe that they're real, living creatures. What are some of the other things that you were told you couldn't do in the songs that you were writing?
One of the mistakes I made was thinking that chickens and penguins could sing, just like all the other animals in the Muppets. But it turns out that those animals are not allowed to actually sing words. They can just cluck and quack. And then I also had another line. I had one of the Muppets reminiscing, I remember when I was just a little piece of felt. And that got shut down pretty soon as well. Because the Muppets are real, and they never were bits of material in their world.
So did they explain why chickens and penguins can only cluck and quack, why they can't sing like the other Muppets?
No, it's just one of those things that they created years ago. I mean, it's great in the early shows where, you know, Gonzo loves the chickens, and they just go, bawk, bawk, when they talk back to Gonzo. So it's a good setup that they can't talk and they can only quack. But I mean, cluck. But it was funny in the studio when I was like, okay, now the penguins sing this line, and the Muppeteers, very serious guys, were just like, I can't sing that line. The penguins won't, they don't say the words. They take it very seriously, fair enough, you know, and they sometimes in the studio they're kind of method Muppets where they, in between takes, they stay in character. So I'm in the studio, we do a take, and then I'm like, can we do it again, can you try it just a little more energy or something like that, and then they talk back to you as Fozzie the Bear or whoever they are.
Seriously?
So it's like I'm having a conversation with the Muppet in there. It's pretty strange, very surreal job.
Wow. So I want to play another song from the Muppet movie, and this is more of a rap than a song. Chris Cooper plays an evil oil magnate who wants to buy the old Muppet studio so that he can destroy it and drill for the oil that's been discovered underneath. He's very wealthy and very powerful, and he has a rap about how very wealthy and powerful and wonderful he is. And I want you to describe what your task was in writing this. What was the job description for this one?
This song was written by a guy called Ali D initially, a New York hip-hop songwriter. And then when I came on, they needed the rap itself to be rewritten. So I wrote Chris Cooper's part. And that was all very, very well. That was all fun. And then I was given the challenge of teaching Chris Cooper himself how to rap, which was another highlight on this roller coaster of a job. Like, it started with me on Skype. He was in Boston and I was in Los Angeles, and we had a bit of a rap session on Skype, just me and Chris Cooper. And luckily, he's got some pretty mad flow.
So, what were some of the moves you had to teach him?
Did you the moves? Oh no, I was more like I would rap a line and he'd rap a line back to me. And I think someone said on set they saw him reading a book on how to rap.
Did you have to tell him exactly how to say "mo money"?
That's funny you should say that line, because the way he was trying to copy the way I did it, but that "mo money" line, I got "mo money." That's what I was trying to do, and he never really got that. He didn't quite get that one.
Okay, well let's hear it. This is Chris Cooper, and this is "Let's Talk About Me" from the Muppet movie soundtrack, and my guest Britt McKenzie, who's half of Flight of the Conchords, wrote the song.
I'm Tex Richman, Mr. Texas T. People call me rich cause I got my money. I got more cheddar than some supersized nachos. Got cash flow like Robert has De Niro's. I use more greens than Vincent Van Gogh. I make the baker bake my bread out of dough. No, don't eat it though, it'll make you ill. There ain't no flour in a $100 bill.
He's Tex Richman.
Oh, yeah.
That's Chris Cooper from the soundtrack of the Muppet movie. The song was written by my guest Britt McKenzie, who is also half of Flight of the Conchords. And he's nominated for an Oscar for another song he wrote for the Muppet movie that's called Man or Muppet.
Woohoo! I'm just celebrating over here in Los Angeles.
So as we record this, it looks like the two nominated songs, are not going to be performed at the Oscars. I feel cheated, but probably not nearly as cheated as you feel.
I was disappointed when I found that out. That was just the other night. And I mean, I'm not complaining to have to go to the Oscars. I'm pretty excited about it all. But yeah, it would have been fun to get a man and a Muppet up there and really hit this one home.
Do you know why they're not performing the songs?
I don't actually. I'm not sure. I mean, it seems crazy. From my experience, it's always good to put a couple of songs in a show. So, I don't know. It just seems that, like, even if they weren't going to broadcast it, they could just have them and then cut them.
It's a live show.
Oh, it's live. Oh, that's probably their problem. Maybe they're worried that we're just going to keep singing.
Yeah. If you were doing Men or Muppet at the Oscars, how would you have liked to stage it?
I don't know. I think maybe I would have played some piano and then get Jason Segel and Walter the Muppet up on stage and then I think them bring in a chorus of background singers with all the Muppets across the back of the stage. Maybe get, you know, Clooney and Pitt up there as well singing along.
Well, Brett McKenzie, thank you so much for talking with us. I really wish you good luck at the Oscars. I love the song. So thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Brett McKenzie speaking with Terry Gross. Apparently, Terry wasn't the only one hoping to see Man or Muppet perform live at the Oscars. In the weeks leading up to the Academy Awards, more than 70,000 people signed an online petition asking the Academy to give the Muppets a chance to perform. Fresh Air Weekend was produced by John Myers. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Roberta Shurrock, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Sheehan, Heidi Simon, and Teresa Madden. Our administrative assistant is Dorothy Farabee. Our associate producer for online media, Melody Kramer, runs Fresh Air's website. That's where you'll find extended versions of our interviews that we couldn't squeeze into this episode of Fresh Air Weekend. Those online versions include a couple of extra songs from Catherine Russell's Fresh Air performance, and more with Brett McKenzie, including his brief a cappella version of the Beck song, Deborah. That's all at freshair.npr.org. For Terry Gross, I'm David Bianculli. This is Fresh Air Weekend.
I met you at JCPenney. I think your name tag, I said Jenny. Step to you with the fish pecker gun.